This podcast was recorded Wednesday, June 18th at 2 o'clock p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Bengals and Steelers fans in Ohio will claim their money and empty the unclaimed funds account so the Browns will have to pay for their new domed stadium all by themselves. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who put controversial items in the state budget to avoid robust political debate. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, filing controversial legislation mainly to get attention. That earns our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, the prospect of a 20% state income tax cut for upper-income Ohioans looks like it may happen. That is the political story of the week here in Ohio. And to break it down, I will turn things over to my colleague, WOSU All Sides host Amy Jurvich, and a panel of experts, reporter Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Bureau, Republican strategist Terry Casey, and Democratic strategist Brian Rothenberg. Here's Amy.
A proposed tax cut for upper-income Ohioans takes center stage in the final act of the state budget process. The Ohio Senate this week approved its version of the budget. It includes a plan to reduce the number of Ohio's income tax brackets to one, creating a flat tax. That means every Ohioan will pay the same percentage of their income taxes, regardless of income level. Those who would benefit directly are Ohioans who earn more than $100,000 a year. They will see about a 20% decrease in their income taxes. It will cost the state at least $1 billion, and the Senate has had to cut the budget in other areas to make up for that lost revenue. Now, so Jesse, this idea of the flat tax, it's going to cost the state a lot of money. And reporter Sarah Donaldson was on my show a few days ago, and she said that one lawmaker told her that they are looking under couch cushions for pennies to make up the money that will be missing if they flatten the tax. So how are senators saying they're going to pay for this?
Well, it's really been part of this like long-term goal of particularly the Ohio Senate, but Republicans in the legislature generally, to reduce the number of tax brackets and to reduce the income tax. And it's been particularly popular recently because Ohio governor candidate Vivek Ramaswamy has talked about eliminating the income tax entirely. Now, Ohio does rely on the income tax for a certain part of its general revenue budget, and so if you're reducing it, then you're going to be trying to get money from other places. Proponents of these kinds of ideas say that you're going to generate economic growth and that's going to help pay for the tax. But, you know, opponents are saying we're cutting programs that Ohioans are relying on now.
Yeah, Terry, there's a whole list of reductions in the budget to make up the revenue for the flat tax.
Reductions from what? There's a misnomer that just because people wanted a certain amount of money and they didn't get it, it's a reduction. Mm-hmm. In actual fact, if you deal with facts, there's increases like in K-12 education over what they got previously. So there's some misleading things. And also on the flat tax, I haven't heard Andy Ginther here in Columbus complain, or other Democrat mayors. Municipalities have flat taxes. In Columbus, it's 2.5%, first dollar and every dollar. And actually, the truth is, if you're a couple, maybe a police officer and a teacher making $150,000 a year between the two of them, they're going to pay three times as much in state income tax as somebody making $50,000. So a flat income tax is not necessarily that onerous. And because of the growth that Ohio's had over the past decade or two as they've trimmed the income tax, they've still had the revenue to provide the services in Ohio and have a healthy rainy day fund of $3.7 billion.
Well, I think Brian's going to tell us what's being cut.
So now that we've heard from Terry, who's a little upset about this, let me explain what a flat tax is. Let me explain what a flat tax is. A flat tax would mean if you make over, in this case, because of the way the brackets are, if you make over $100,000, you'll get about a 20% cut in your taxes. People below $100,000 will stay about the same because they're at that level. Now, what does that mean? It means if I make $1 million, I get more of an actual tax cut as a percentage of my income than somebody making below $100,000 or a family. What also does this mean? As you cut things in other areas of the budget like this, it's going to be paid more by consumers. So, because we're saying we're making it up through consumers. So what this really is, is dumping the cost of government more and more on poorer people as a percentage of your income and giving a break to the millionaires.
Now,
that's what this is.
The Senate Finance Chair, Jerry Serino, he said that this will be good for attracting people to Ohio, but he also said that Democrats are disparaging wealthy, successful business people who pay the most taxes anyway.
I'm not disparaging anyone. I hope everybody's wealthy, but just pay your fair share and stop arguing about it and stop dumping it on poor people and then taking their Medicaid away and taking all their other services away.
You missed the math course. If you're a millionaire, you're paying 10 times as much as the person making $100,000 a year.
But as a percentage of your income,
where does it say that it's got to be a higher percentage as you make more money? Where is that carved in the Constitution?
Well, so what you want to do is eventually go to that or go to a VAT tax, which is expenditures simply.
I didn't say that, Brian.
But if you get rid of the income tax and we get rid of the property tax, there's nothing left but purchases. And as a percentage of your income, it's going to cost more people that don't have money.
Well, Jesse, what's going to happen with this in conference committee over the next 2 weeks? Will we be able to compromise on this? Does the House want a flat tax?
Yeah, we spoke with Speaker Matt Huffman this week, and I think he's generally favorable towards cutting income taxes, so I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up in the final version. I will say Governor Mike DeWine, when he introduced his budget, didn't include one of these cuts and said that this isn't something that businesses are looking for.
Terry, we'll just go back to you for a second with the conference committee. Can the Senate and House agree on this with the way to make up the revenue to balance the budget? We have to balance the budget.
Well, they have figured it out, and the budget's going to be balanced. It's still going to have $3.7 billion in the rainy day fund. And yes, some things can happen on Medicaid because we don't know yet what Congress and the federal government will do there, or something could happen to the economy. But Ohio's going to have a balanced budget, and people like K through 12 education is getting more money than they had previously.
I don't want to get into K through 12 education too much, but they are having more funding in the Senate budget than the House, but it's at 2021 levels, which it does cost more to educate a child. There has been inflation.
But you've also got shrinking enrollment in K through 12 that nobody wants to talk about, funding phantom students. So there's a lot of issues in the budget, and some districts are growing, some aren't, some are shrinking. There's a lot of things happening.
We could talk about phantom students in charter schools, where if a student goes to the charter school for one day and goes back to the public school, the money doesn't go back. But we could also talk about it's interesting. You brag about the rainy day fund at the state level, but I've heard you and other Republicans talk about how you want to make sure school districts can only have a small percentage of their rainy day funds. Now, which is it?
Well, but $3.7 billion out of a total budget of about $6 billion is a very small percentage, much different than, say, the Columbus schools.
So you do believe percentages should be different when it comes to taxes?
Well, you can't can't compare apples and giraffes, and the Columbus schools did a fraud a year and a half ago of getting $100 million more.
I don't see it as a fraud, when they had
$438 million cash on hand, plus tens of millions of unspent COVID money, and they got another $100 million from the taxpayers, telling the taxpayers they needed the more money.
So taxpayers are wrong.
A tax cut debate in Columbus, a tax cut debate in Washington. Well, we'll all be watching. Amy will be right back with another discussion about what is up with Ohio Democrats.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
The Ohio Democratic Party has a new leader. Party leaders this week named former state legislator Kathleen Clyde as party chair. She replaces Liz Walters, who left to take a job in Washington. Clyde is fairly well known in Democratic circles. She ran for Secretary of State 5 years ago, but lost. She had the backing of a very important Ohio Democrat, former Senator Sherrod Brown. She says her priorities are fighting back against Trump policies, recruiting candidates, and raising money. But it won't be an easy job. Ohio has just one statewide elected Democrat, Supreme Court Justice Jennifer Bruner. So, Brian, Kathleen Clyde has a lot of work to do. Ohio Democrats do not have a deep bench when it comes to candidates. How is she going to fix this?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I do think there is a bench here in Ohio, and I can tell you Amy Acton, so far running for governor, has raised more money as a first-time gubernatorial candidate in a non-year. She's going to report over $1 million. She's drawing crowds all over Ohio, so I think that's part of it. I do think part of it is Sherrod has got to make a decision so we can move forward on the ticket and people can start raising money, but there's plenty of time. There's a year and a half. And I think that the new party chairman is going to have to, that's her first task and most difficult task.
So we're all just waiting on Sherrod Brown to make a decision.
Unfortunately, and I have to say, you know, I think Sherrod's and Sherrod's folks probably know this, but sooner rather than later, the decision has to be made.
Republicans have a slew of declared candidates for all of the lower level, you know, attorney general, auditor, secretary of state. You know, the Democrats haven't really.
This is the most winnable year Democrats have had since 2006, because you have a president that is extremely unpopular, even within his own party and some aspects of it. You know, he's appealing to MAGA, but MAGA is part of a primary vote. It's not part of a general election vote. And they're all open seats. This is a real opportunity for Democrats, and I think she comes in at an excellent time. And if you see the energy and the amount of people turning out for people like Amy Acton, you know that there's opportunity here.
I'm going to partly agree with Brian that Sherrod Brown's doing a disservice to the Democrat Party by waiting and waiting to say what he's going to do, because they're missing a lot. And also Kathleen Clyde, I mean, she couldn't even get elected county commissioner in Portage County with Kent State University there and a lot of liberal leaning. So Kathleen Clyde is not only very liberal, but does not have a stellar record of winning. And if you're a university or an NFL team and you want to get over your losing days, you normally don't hire a losing coach. You hire somebody that's got some experience winning and being successful.
She's won races, too. There's a history of people in this state who have lost races and gone on to win other offices. Gee, I think we have a governor that did.
Now, Jesse, what's happening around the state house? What are they saying about Sherrod Brown? Will he run for U.S. Senate again, or will he run for governor?
It's hard to say, but I will say I think most Democrats would want him to run for governor, because that's considered the top of the ticket. You have a pretty a lot of attention on the race with Vivek Ramaswamy really kind of snatching up the Republican nomination on that side, versus if you run for U.S. Senate, you have to fundraise for this cycle and then the next cycle immediately. It's just harder to do. But Senator Sherrod Brown, former Senator Sherrod Brown, has much more experience as a legislator than it's been quite some time since he's been an executive.
The third option there, running for governor, running for U.S. Senate, he could just stay out of it.
That is a possibility, and that's one of the reasons why if we're going to move on from this and he does do that, it has to happen soon. But I will say that, you know, Amy Acton, I don't know who's following her on Facebook, but the crowd sizes that she's getting in rural counties and in urban counties, it's really reminiscent of what I saw early on from Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan.
Do you feel like Amy Acton can go up against a Vivek Ramaswamy?
I think she definitely could. I think the issue is going to be money. But I also think that we've all got to remember this election is going to be about Donald Trump.
And Terry, what's your take on the Democrats for all of these other positions? You know, I mentioned attorney general, auditor, secretary of state. The only statewide office Democrats have right now is Supreme Court Justice Jennifer Bruner. What's your outlook there?
Well, contrary to Brian's rose-colored glasses, the Democrat bench is pretty thin. And also, they've had a problem. There's been people like Jennifer Bruner in the past who's wanted to run statewide, like for Senate, and Sherrod Brown put his thumb down and said, no, it should be Lee Fisher. So the Democrats have made some bad picks in terms of like Dan Whaley, Ed Fitzgerald, candidates that Sherrod Brown pushed and said ought to be the ones, and then they didn't turn out very well. So the Democrats still got to get their act together, and I'm not sure that Kathleen Clyde really solves anything or makes the change that's needed.
I have my faith in Portage County.
I love Portage County. It has some great state parks. It's a beautiful spot just outside of Cleveland. My thanks to this week's panel, Democratic strategist Brian Rothenberg, Republican strategist Terry Casey, USA Today Ohio Bureau reporter Jesse Balmert, and, of course, WOSU's Amy Jurevich. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This week, we give it to two state lawmakers who have filed a bill that would ban abortions in Ohio and criminalize in vitro fertilization. The bill comes less than 2 years after Ohio voters easily approved a constitutional amendment guaranteeing a woman's right to an abortion and prohibiting the state from interfering in reproductive procedures. Even Ohio Right to Life's Mike Gonadaka says the bill goes too far and is unconstitutional. It's obviously a shrewd political move to get attention, which is why we're not naming the two state reps who filed the bill. And they this week get our Snollygosters of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.